You're listening to the Fresh Hell Podcast. Fresh Hell contains stories of a disturbing and often graphic nature and is intended for a mature audience. Please don't let your kids listen to this, or they might turn out like us.
Hi, I'm Johanna from Austria, and you are listening to your favorite international podcast. And as you can hear, Annie is still not here with us today, but every day she feels a teeny tiny bit better, and I'm sure we'll have her back with us in no time. Let's all send her our good and healing vibes and keep her in our thoughts. If you are new and this is your first episode, first of all, welcome, but also, I need to tell you that usually it's not just me here, all by myself, talking into the void. Usually I have my wonderful co-host with me. Not physically here with me, because we live on two different continents and never met in real life yet. Her name is Annie, and she has the most amazing, soothing, lovely voice. And if you stick around, you will love her. Or you can go back to one of our other episodes and listen for yourself. And if you are one of our regulars, you of course know Annie, and I'm not telling you anything new. Thank you so much for your ongoing support, all your lovely messages, and your ratings and or reviews. And as always, I want to give a special shout out to our newest Patreons, and they are Victoria Rodriguez, Jessica Kinsey, Kim Shields, I'm sorry if I pronounced it incorrectly, Sarah, and Janine Shelton. Thank you so much. You don't know how much we appreciate it and how much you help us by supporting us. Also, I want to say thank you to all our Patreons for always being so patient and understanding, especially now as we're sorting out the Hellion pin thing, and as soon as Annie feels better, we will have the rest of them on their way to you. Also, if you are in our murder or mystery tier, please, please, please get cracking on your theory for our first What Do You Think Happened episode. Write it down, send it to us. We can't wait to hear from you and discuss all your theories. If you want to know more about our Patreon, listen until the end, then I'll tell you where you can find all the information that you need. All right, let's get into today's episode. This is such a sad case. I know we say this a lot, because it's always true. All these cases are heartbreaking, often infuriating, and all for a variety of reasons. And this case is no exception. And what is the saddest part, the most infuriating part, is that the victim could still be alive if... Well, you'll see. So this takes place in Germany of 1971. Many of us were not alive back then, including myself, so let's see what was going on back then. This crime happened in January of 1971, so I decided to look at 1970 to get a feel of what we're dealing with, right? So in Germany, the song called The Song of Joy by the Spanish singer Miguel Ríos was number one in the charts for a total of 15 weeks, so from October 1st to December 1st, 1970. And then it was replaced by Paranoid by Black Sabbath. But The Song of Joy was back on number one on 4th of January 1971 and stayed there for the rest of the month. Other songs that were extremely popular around the time were a lot of songs by Simon and Garfunkel, like Cecilia, El Condor Pasa. Then there was In the Summertime by Mungo Jerry, Lola by The Kinks, Let It Be by The Beatles, who broke up in 1970, and a lot of CCR, which, you know, if you're a regular listener, you know. What else was going on? The world's population reaches 3.6 billion people. The US population reaches 205 million. There is Apollo 13. The Vietnam War protests are still in full swing, and at Kent State University, students are shot by the National Guard during protests. 4 students die. There's a cholera outbreak in Istanbul. There are wildfires in Australia that kill 75 people. The first Earth Day takes place. People in the US can now vote at age 18. It was 21 before. The Supremes perform their last concert, but the Jackson 5 make their debut. The Concorde makes its first supersonic flight. Midnight Cowboy is awarded Best Movie in the Academy Awards. The FIFA World Cup is held in Mexico and Brazil wins. It's the first country to win 3 times. The Women's Strike for Equality takes place on Fifth Avenue. Jochen Rindt, the Austrian Formula One racer, dies in a tragic accident during the Italian Grand Prix qualification. Elvis is touring again. He had stopped to perform live concerts in 1958. Jimi Hendrix dies. Janis Joplin dies. Alan Wilson dies. Jim Morrison would follow in 1971. So all in all, it's a time of a lot of change, death, tragedy, occasionally something good, pretty much like every era, except with a little bit more plain hijacking. Now let's head to early January of 1971. In the night of 1st of January, which was a Friday, 18-year-old Ulrich Nacken decides to visit a discotheque in Cologne. I think the first really big discotheques, the ones we picture when we think of 1970s disco, they opened a couple of years later in Cologne, but the first music clubs that can be considered discos or dance clubs opened already in 1964. And so Ulrich is having a fun time in one of those clubs. I wish I could tell you a lot about Ulrich. What he liked, what he didn't like. If he had siblings, was he an older brother? Did he love animals? Had he already experienced the first heartbreak? But unfortunately, I can't. I mentioned it in other cases from the era. Sometimes it's easier to find details about a victim of a case from 1800, 18-something, than from the 1970s or 1980s, at least over here. Here the media can't release a lot of private information, and it's absolutely understandable. So the only things I know are Ulrich was 18, he was an electrician, just like my brother, who is 20 now. So right there when I read this, I felt this like little knot in my stomach tightening. And he owned a car. It was not a fancy car, it was not a new car, but he was probably very proud of his car. That's just me assuming here, but again, I picture my little brother and every other 18-year-old with his first car that I ever knew. So Ulrich was spending the evening at a disco in Cologne, and it was well after midnight when he decided it was time to leave and make his way home. So he left the club, he walked over to the parking lot where he had parked his car, and it was a cold night in the early hours of 2nd of January. The lowest temperature, I checked of course, in Cologne that day were minus 8 degrees Celsius. And that's 17.6 degree Fahrenheit, if I converted that correctly. And I'm sure he was looking forward to crawl into his warm and cozy bed at home and sleep in the next day. At least, that's what I did at 18 when I came home from going out. When he arrived at his car, he was approached by 3 men. 22-year-old Slobodan Simic, 25-year-old Slobodan Vucic, and a third one. I have to tell you, I don't know the name or age of the third man, but I assume that he was around the same age as the others, so in his early 20s. They asked Ulrich to take him to the train station, but Ulrich denied and told them that he didn't feel comfortable driving 3 drunk guys he didn't know, but that's not the answer that they wanted to hear, because next the 3 men attacked Ulrich, overpowered him, and threw him in the trunk of his own car, because what the 3 wanted was his car. And then the 3 attackers got into the vehicle and drove off. And the first stop was the home of the third man, the one where we don't have any information. He got out of the car, wished his 2 friends a good night, and he went home to sleep. Apparently very unbothered by the fact that he and his friends had just committed a kidnapping and grand theft auto. His 2 friends, the 2 Slobodans, kept driving. I don't think they really knew where they wanted to go or what they wanted to do. One of the ideas apparently was to visit the girlfriend of one of them, who lived in a town 400 kilometers or 250 miles northeast of Cologne. I think they were not really sure about the way they were driving, or maybe they were too drunk and changed directions, because it's unclear why they then drove west, left the city behind and soon found themselves on the L352 between Much and Neunkirchen. And at one point they decided that it was best to get rid of Ulrich and leave him in the middle of nowhere. So they parked the car on the side of the road, they pulled Ulrich out of the trunk, hit him in the head several times, he was bleeding from his nose and mouth, and forced him to undress, only leaving him in his socks and underwear. One of the newspaper articles stated that one of the attackers liked Ulrich's jacket, which was a border tartan design. In German, and I think in French, we call it Pepita. It's this tiny two-colored checkers pattern. I checked, and in English there are several names for it. There's shepherd's check, border tartan, border check. I hope you know what I mean. So probably one of them wanted this jacket, and when they had Ulrich take it off, that probably gave them the idea of having him undress completely. So this is a more rural area, and when you look on Google Maps, you can see that there are tiny villages along the road, but there is a lot of green area, mostly fields, only a few wooded areas, not too big though. And after Ulrich was mostly naked, the two men led him into the wooded area, 300 meters or 328 yards away from the road. Then they tied him up with electrical wires. My brother has so much equipment from his electrician shop in his car at all times, and it's horrible for me to picture them finding the electrical wires and thinking that's great to tie him up. So they tie his hands at the wrist, his feet at the ankles, and then they tie him to a tree. And that's where the two men left Ulrich. They went back to the road, got in Ulrich's car, and they drove off. Now Ulrich was alone. It was freezing cold, remember, -8 degrees Celsius. The snow was 40 centimeters deep, that's 15.7 inches. This situation was life-threatening, and the two kidnappers knew it. It's not like it was summer and there was a chance for Ulrich to survive for a few hours outside, almost naked. He must have felt so desperate. But this young man managed to gather all his strength to try and free himself. And he actually did. He really could free himself from the wire that had tied him to the tree. He, however, didn't manage to get rid of the ties around his ankles or wrist. I have to say that there are various newspaper articles that stated otherwise, that he actually could free his hands, but not his ankles. In the end, it doesn't really make that much of a difference, though. I can only imagine how his fingers must have felt. I think all of us who live in areas with freezing cold temperatures know the feeling when you're outside without gloves on and you try to use your fingers, for example, to untie a knot. It's nearly impossible. So Ulrich was free from the tree, but his feet were definitely still tied. And now he jumped and crawled to the road, 300 meters or more than 300 yards, through the snow. He fell a couple of times, but he did it. He reached the road. And the best part, he saw a car coming. Ulrich must have been so relieved. The driver would see him and help him, and he was safe. But imagine Ulrich's horror when he realized that the car didn't stop or even slow down. And who knows, maybe there were even more cars who drove past Ulrich on this early winter morning. But we definitely, without a doubt, know about one. And I'll tell you in a minute why we know about that one car. But first we need to talk about Ulrich's fate. And I'm sure you already know what happened to him, because Ulrich died of hypothermia. He froze to death. Around 5 a.m. that day, a man delivering newspaper discovered Ulrich's body. And remember, no cell phones. So all he could do was he could drive to the closest house, which was the home of a farmer. And there they called the police. Soon they had a doctor there, two farmers were there, I think one of them was the one who had called the police, and the police started to look for evidence, because it was apparent that this was a crime scene. Soon they could figure out the identity of Ulrich Nacken, and they realized that his car was missing, so a warrant for the car was issued. And what about the two murderers? After they had left Ulrich, they returned to Cologne and went to bed. And we all know what Annie would say right now if she were here. Who are these people? And I agree, how cold-blooded do you have to be to go to bed after you left a young man to freeze to death? The next day, they partied with some other friends and their girlfriends, and after a while, I guess after a couple of drinks, they decided that they should return to the place where they had left Ulrich the day before. And I think we can all agree that this was not out of guilt, or to see if he's still alive and free him, because obviously there was absolutely no way that he would still be there and alive. He would either be gone or still there and dead. So they drove back and they found the place and they checked and saw that he was gone. And I read one article from August this year, so 2021. This article was actually one of the most helpful sources, and I'll link it in our album of the case. And the author writes that the police found a car near the place where Ulrich had died, and that there was no frost or snow on the car, and that the hood of the car was still a bit warm to the touch. And that's how they knew that the murderer or murderers were still nearby. And indeed they were, and the police could arrest them. So that's one version. I'm not 100% sure that this version is the correct one, because the articles from early January 1971 told another story. And because this crime made international news immediately, I found several articles in US newspapers, and most of them with similar wording to this one that I'm going to read to you now. This one is from the Daily Register from Beckley, West Virginia, from 6th of January 1971, and it was on page 10. Titled Two Slavs Held for Naked Man Murder. 1. Two men have been arrested as suspects in the death of a young man who froze to death after being tied almost naked to a tree in near zero temperatures. Police said Slobodan Simic, 22, and Slobodan Vucetic, 25, both Yugoslavs, were detained Monday. One was driving an automobile owned by the victim, Ulrich Nacken, and the other was trying to hitchhike on a highway near Bonn. Nacken's body, clad only in undershorts and socks, was found Saturday by the side of a road outside Neunkirchen. Police said Nacken appeared to have broken the bonds on his wrist, but was unable to free his feet, which were bound with a wire. He crawled more than 300 yards through the snow before dying of exposure. End quote. If you could hear a little tiny tippy toes in the back, that was Cem running around. Sorry. So you see, this is slightly different, but the outcome is the same. And soon after, the police is also able to arrest the third man who was involved, the one who had left the car near his home in Cologne. So that's good, right? The three culprits could be arrested only 2 days after the horrible crime. And now starts all the investigation, state attorney prepares the charges, and the trial date is set up. But in the meantime, let's talk about how we know for sure that at least one car saw Ulrich there in the street that day, still alive. Because the driver himself came forward. Here is how I read it in one article, but I couldn't 100% verify this, so please, you know, grain of salt. But what the article said was that the driver was a 39-year-old man, an interior designer, who was in the car with two women. When they passed Ulrich and saw the young, naked, tied-up man jumping around in the snow, the driver stated that he thought that this was just a practical joke by some teenagers who were still drunk and partying because of New Year's. Just let that sink in. You see a naked, tied-up man, or almost naked, who has blood on his face, coming from his nose and mouth, and you figure, ha ha, funny, and you keep driving. And you don't even think about reporting this to the police. Don't get me wrong, there are a couple of things that I want to mention in regards of helping others and civil courage, and that your own safety always comes first. But this man in that car was not scared, he just thought that it was a joke. And he didn't bother to check if he was even right with his assumption, or if this tied up person actually did need help. So far all of this, what I just told you, is verifiable. But the part that I'm not 100% sure about, but still I would like to mention it, is the following. The way the driver came forward. It's quite possible that he didn't contact the police as soon as he heard about the crime, but that he contacted the media. And he said that he's probably the last person who saw Ulrich alive that morning, and he offered them an interview. So, yeah. Now let's get to the trial. It started on 10th of January 1972, so a bit over a year after Ulrich's death, and it was held in Bonn, which back then was the capital of Germany. Or, to be more exact, the capital of the Federal Republic of Germany. Berlin only became the capital of Germany in 1991, after Western and Eastern Germany were reunited. Ulrich's father, Wilhelm Nacken, and Ulrich's uncle attended the trial. And it must have been incredibly hard to hear all the things that were talked about during the trial. One of the murderers testified that he felt as if he was possessed by a demon when they were beating Ulrich in the head with a knife handle, and how Ulrich had yelled, "Why? Why?" They also read a really whiny letter from one of the Slobodans to his girlfriend, where he talked about how he wished he was dead, and Ulrich's father couldn't contain himself and exclaimed, "Then why don't you hang yourself?" On the 9th day of the trial, the accused, the jury, the attorneys, police boarded a bus to inspect the place where Ulrich froze to death. The place was marked by a simple wooden cross that the two farmers had placed there. Ulrich's father was there as well, so was the media, and some looky-loos. The jury was shown around, they looked at the marks on a light pole, for example, that were left by Ulrich when he tried to free himself. The weather must have been similar to the day when Ulrich died. Snow is on the ground, everybody's wearing winter coats. It gives a sense of what that young man must have felt. And it's too much for Ulrich's dad, and he jumps one of the murderers with the words, "I'm going to bludgeon you to death," and he wrangles him to the ground. It takes three policemen to pull the desperate father off the accused man. It's heartbreaking. And there exists a photo from that moment that even made it into Life magazine. The verdict came in on 27th of January 1972. The two murderers were sentenced to life in prison. I have to say, I don't know what happened to them, how long they had to stay in prison. I'm sure they are probably not in prison anymore, if they are still alive, I don't know. Their accomplice, who had been charged for mugging and car theft, was sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. And the man who hadn't stopped to help Ulrich had to pay a fine of 1,000 German mark. Considering inflation, this would equal roughly 1,800 euros or 2,000 US dollars. And while researching this case, I came across a thread in a forum where Germans discussed how big of a case this was back then, and that they even learned in school about what had happened to Ulrich to teach them, you know, about the importance of helping people who are in need and about civil courage. And I'm sure that most of you will know at least one other case that deals with the subject of failure to render assistance, I think it's called in English. I think the most famous one is the Kitty Genovese case, which that's a whole episode on its own, maybe one day. But for those of you who don't know the case, just real quick, Kitty Genovese was a woman who was stabbed in 1964 outside of her apartment building in Queens. And a claim was made that 38 people had heard her screams and cry for help, yet nobody bothered to even call the police. And this case coined the term bystander syndrome or Genovese effect. And that's a theory that states, quote, that individuals are less likely to offer help to a victim when there are other people present, end quote. Of course, this is vastly different from the Ulrich Nacken case, as the bystander theory could not apply to the driver. He was the only one who could help at that moment. Well, him and the two passengers, but they built a unit in this case. I'm also happy to inform you that in the Kitty Genovese case, there actually were people who had called in. Several did. But as I said, that's a whole other episode. Or you could go watch the documentary The Witness, which is about this case, and I can highly recommend it. It's really good and in-depth. And as I said before, if you ever come in a situation where you have the feeling someone needs help, please remember that your own safety comes first. You know, nowadays it's easier. We have cell phones. Well, we have them with us most of the time. I don't have them with me all the time. Let's say you have a cell phone with you when you need help while on the road. So much easier. But also nowadays we are way more cautious because we learned that there are evil, wild people out there who try to lure well-meaning people into a dangerous situation and to ambush them. Take care of yourself first, but then, if you can, do something. Call 911, for example, or whatever the emergency hotline is in your country that you live in. And also, if you are in a crowd and you see that someone needs help, don't trust that somebody else will take care of the situation, because there's always a chance nobody will. So what you can do is address others directly. Hey, you with the green shirt, call 911. Hey, you lady with the craw on your shoulder, get some water. You know, people will react when you address them directly. Because guess what? Most people are not evil motherfuckers, but they're just scared, or they're shocked, or they don't know what to do. There are so many moments out there when people need you. People like Ulrich Nacken, or like Kitty Genovese, or like Bettina Sostak, who grew up in a town very close to the place where Ulrich Nacken died. She too was the victim of non-assistance of a person in danger, and she donated a memorial stone that was set up in the spot where Ulrich's body was found, there along the L352 between Much and Neunkirchen. The memorial stone was set up in 2010, so 11 years ago. And on it you can read, quote, "Zum Gedenken an Ulrich Nacken, gestorben 2.1.1971, und alle anderen Opfer unterlassener Hilfeleistung," end quote. And that roughly translates to, "In memory of Ulrich Nacken, who died on 2nd of January 1971, and all the other victims of failure to assist a person in danger," end quote. And that's it. That's the very sad, very unnecessary death of Ulrich Nacken. I know this is a shorter episode, it's a shorter case, there's not so much information out there. It's weird for me because it was apparently such a huge case when it happened. It made international news, but there's nothing in the archives that I could find. Not a lot, anyway. And yes, it's a shorter case, but it's very important nonetheless to talk about these things, right? Now for my something good. There is something good. I'm getting into the Christmas mood. Most of you will know last year I didn't celebrate Christmas. I spent Christmas Eve, which is when we here are celebrating Christmas in Austria, sobbing hysterically in my car. And honestly, up until this week, I felt like I'm never gonna be able to get into the Christmas spirit again. I also mentioned it before. Christmas is very, very... it's a big thing for my family. My grandfather loved it a lot. My dad loved it so much. We spent Christmas every year with my dad. And so it's hard. It's tough. I don't know what happened, but this week, I don't know, I got really into that. I had a feeling Dad would want us to celebrate Christmas. Dad would want me to decorate the house. And that's what I'm gonna do this week. My sister even told me she's gonna help me. I know that's also hard for her. We're gonna make everything nice, even though I live in a construction site, but that doesn't matter. I'm gonna hang some lights. I'm part of the advent calendar window decoration in our little tiny village. They asked me to decorate for 20th of December. That's gonna be our window. I'm gonna post photos then of what we're gonna do. I already have an idea. And yeah, it feels kind of nice. Maybe I'm talking too soon and then Christmas Eve will come and I'm gonna feel horrible again, but at least my husband is gonna be home and it's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay, right? If you enjoyed this episode, or better, go back, listen to our usual episodes with Annie and me, and if you enjoyed those and you subscribe to our channel, maybe you could do us the huge favor to go and check on your podcast app to see if you could leave us a rating and or review. It would help us out so much. You have no idea. Also, if you go to our webpage, which is freshhellpodcast.com, you find all the links of all the things you would like to know about our Patreon, for example, to our Instagram, to our Facebook. Please, if you're on Facebook, believe me, the only reason why I'm still on Facebook is our Fresh Hell group. People are amazing. We're still growing. I think we have over 3,000 members now, which is amazing. And it's barely true crime. It's everything else, from house porn to pets to everything that we find bizarre and interesting. So please come say hi. We're really active there. Our merch store, you'll find a link to that. And I think that's it. Oh, also we have a PO box if you want to send us a Christmas card or something like that. What else? Please tell your pets we said hi. We love them. We miss them. Cuddle them for us. All your pets. The good ones, the bad ones, the scaly ones, the hairy ones, the naked ones. There are so many naked pets out there. The bitey ones, the scratchy ones, the fluffy ones, the pretty ones, the ugly ones, the old ones, the babies, all of them. They are the best pets and they deserve the best life. Take always good care of them, promise me. Also, please, I think this episode especially warrants me saying, please, please, please be kind to your fellow human being. Sometimes they're assholes. Give them a chance. And if you see somebody who's in need, ask, can I help you? Do you need something? Try it. It's good. You'll see. And that's it. And if you are going through hell, keep going. Tschüss. Bye.